Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Rob Taxpayer of the experimental punk rock band The Taxpayers. The group recently ended a multi-year hiatus with the album Circle Breaker, which reflects a series of events that have allowed the band to reflect on life, death, friendship, and trauma. That's Rob Taxpayer of The Taxpayers on Into Music, coming up now. This record puts a period on a kind of long period of not recording music and releasing music. Tell me about that hiatus.
We didn't stop playing music. We stopped getting together regularly to record and tour in like 2016 or 2017 or so. And it was right after, so basically we finished up this record called Big Delusion Factory. And it was the last Taxpayers record before we stopped getting together regularly. And at that point, we had all kind of scattered to the winds. Like, we all started together in the same place in Portland, Oregon in 2007. And we were kind of based out of there. And then on various tours and stuff, we just gathered members. We kind of snowballed. We gathered people from different places. And then, like, over the years, you know, stuff happens. People, you know, got jobs, or they just wanted to move. They wanted to go to different places. I think at that point, I had moved to New Orleans, Louisiana, which was in like 2011 or so. I went to go get my teaching license in at the University of New Orleans, and I wanted to be an elementary school teacher because the creative writing thing wasn't working out for me. I forget at what point people move, but, you know, nowadays we've got people in, you know, Philadelphia, Detroit. I'm in Minneapolis these days. We've got, Oregon, Washington, kind of spread out all over the place. And so because we were spread out, for the first couple of years, we were like, we're going to make this happen. We're going to keep on getting together and doing stuff because we love each other. And it's always been a really important outlet for us to be able to get together and make something together. But it gets harder when people are that far apart. You know what I mean? Like it's just the logistics of it. And, so, you know, for the first couple of years, like we did an album called Cold Hearted Town while we were living in different places. And we got together for a few tours, but then it just got like harder and harder, and people, you know, started families and they started careers that made it harder to tour regularly and things like that. Eventually some of us like had kids. I've got a kid now, he's almost 2 years old. And, you know, just all of that just led to us becoming harder and harder for us to do stuff. So when we floated the idea, like, and then of course, like, you know, Donald Trump became president for the first time. And we were like, what is going on in this country? And so we, you know, I kept on writing. Like I write pretty compulsively. I write, you know, at least weekly. It used to be more frequently. I used to be able to say like nightly, but with a kid, it's not nightly anymore. It's impossible to do that nightly. But I still like had all these songs and stuff. And so we were like, hey, does anyone want to get together? Not everybody could do it. So we decided to get together and call it something else. We did like a, it was called Trusty Snakes. We did a country record of country songs. And then, and that was in, oh, I don't know, 2018 maybe or something like that. And then, more songs kept coming. And then eventually, I think part of it was, so we all still saw each other pretty regularly for, you know, just for fun, for, you know, family events, for weddings, for, you know, whatever, like our other bands would go on tour and we would meet up. And we always talked about some different ideas that some things that like could only be done as a Taxpayers record. And eventually we decided to do it. It was post pandemic. And I think after the pandemic, I don't know if you can say post-pandemic, you know, I suppose in some ways it never ended, but post the height of the pandemic, I think everyone was feeling a little vulnerable, a little bit wanting to connect with the things they cared about the most and the people that they cared about the most. And I think that was a big push to get together and do something again. Also, like, know our drummer, he had had a kid, and I had a kid on the way when we first started talking about actually doing another Taxpayers record. And I think those things, those like really meaningful milestones, are one of the big things that brought us back together. But then the thing that the like record is largely about is about all these traumatic events that had been happening to us over the years. And so I think being able to get together to process all that together was another big impetus for getting together, if that makes sense.
So there wasn't a point where anybody said, okay, that was fun. We're all in different corners now. Adios. It was just when the time comes, we'll do it again. It'll be like throwing the bat signal.
Yeah, kind of. Well, so you know Fugazi, right? So Fugazi, they famously, like, they don't break up. They just don't do an album for 20 years, and then they do another album. And then we were like, when we were playing regularly, we were like, well, look, we'll just be like Fugazi. If any of us just, if we get really pissed off at each other and we need a break from each other, we'll take a little break. We'll check back in. We'll do it like Fugazi does, you know, and we'll keep it going. We always had the idea that it would be this lifelong thing that we did together. This way of not only maintaining our relationships with each other, but maintaining this outlet for, you know, processing the world around us. And there are only so many situations, like as a when you're a creative person that collaborates with other people on things, like maybe like at first. I guess I'm talking about bands specifically, but I think this applies to lots of different creative endeavors that are collaborative. Like when you're younger, you think I could do this with anybody. You know, you start all these different bands, and then the older you get, you start to realize like there are only certain amalgamations of people that make a certain thing. And you know, like at least I've spoken with other musicians about this where they're like, you know, I've had like a million different punk bands, and all of these punk bands, like I used to just, you know, I would start one this week and end it, and then start another one the next week and end it. And it was because it was almost this out of control, you know, rock rolling down a hill, and it was gonna happen one way or another. And then the older you get, the more you realize like that thing that you felt so inspired by, that you felt so connected to the universe by, it doesn't happen every time that you do it. You know, like sometimes you get together and you have a great time, you make some music with your friends, or you meet some new friends and you make some music together, but it's not the same as when you have that special group of people that for whatever reason, like personalities and ways of looking at things, and just a shared history also. Like once you share history with people, after a certain point you become comfortable with them to the degree that you can be yourself a little bit more, for better or worse. Like you can, you know, maybe you can be a little more of an asshole in some regards when it comes to, you know, these people that you're really close with, which I think is an important part of being able to be vulnerable and make stuff. And so we never ended. We always said we didn't ever want to end, that it would be bad if we did, because it would be like throwing in the towel on our relationships in a way, you know? Like, it's almost as if you have different ways of looking at what a band is. And I don't think, like, no judgment on people who look at a band as like a job or a, you know, like you're doing it with a group of people that if you end it, maybe you'll still be friends, maybe not, but like, you know, it's no big deal if you end it. But for us, it was like, if we end it, I feel like giving up a little bit. I don't want to put too much pressure on it. I guess I'm like, the other band members are going to hear this and be like, holy shit, Rob, that's a lot of pressure. Like, we gotta.
Well, I wonder about this. Like, my dad's generation, like they had their they had their Elks Club or whatever. And I wonder for younger people sometimes if something like a band is that kind of fraternal organization or whatever.
It is. My dad was in the Elks Club too. My dad's dad was really big into it. My dad had that kind of thing, but they created their own, their own get together group, right? Everybody has to have a group of some kind. You need a connection to it. Yeah, maybe bands are fill that role. That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought of that. Because, now that I think about when like who am I getting together with regularly and spending my time with when I have free time? It's like, former bandmates, things like that. People you share experiences with. Especially touring, Jed, like it's such a like you've toured, you're a musician, you've done tours and stuff before.
No.
You've never done tour. You're a musician, aren't you? Oh, I thought you were. I thought you're just a writer specifically. Like what type of writing do you do?
So I studied fiction writing, and then I did music journalism for 10 years and wound up in broadcasting.
Do you ever go on the road with any of your writing, like to read from a new thing that you've been working on? Or
No.
okay, so for touring, it's like, imagine you're crammed into a vehicle with like 10 people and it's very stressful, but it's also you're sharing these experiences in very tight quarters with people during formative years of your life. At least for me, it was like in my 20s and 30s were when we were touring very heavily. And that's a bonding experience that you share. And it's anytime you're in close quarters with people and you're going through stuff together, especially stressful things, or you're having to problem solve together to come out on the other side of something, you bond really heavily. And touring breaks a lot of people as a result of that. And my God, have we come close to being fucking broken on many tours. Like I can think the amount of times, we got into a $400 van that we bought off Craigslist. There's no way it was gonna make it to like the entire tour. And then broke down in the middle of nowhere with like $30 to our name and none of us having any like jobs or backup funds or anything like that. And having to be like, what are we gonna do now? The amount of times that that happened over like, dozens and dozens of tours is like it at first, you're pulling out your hair and you're like, I hate this person who I'm in the van with. They're pissing me off so much. They stress me out. They always say this thing that like makes me really upset. And the way that they respond, I don't like how they respond to these stressful situations. And then when you come out on the other side of it, you're like hugging that person. You're like, I love this person so much. This person gets me more than anybody else gets me in the entire world. And like, you have these drastic swings back and forth. And you see the ugly side of that person. They see the ugly side of you. You see the most beautiful, connected side of that person, and likewise for you, And so, like, you're sharing this range of extremes. And it's why a lot of bands break up after tours, is that's really stressful. But then I think once you make it through a couple of really stressful tours, if you make it out on the other side of that, you're bonded for life, You're there, it's like it's family at that point. And it, becomes harder to give up on that.
I guess I will say I did travel with a couple of local bands to an out of town gig or a couple out of town gigs. They had the old school bus kind of situation, and on the way back, we're on the Kansas Turnpike, and there's like a belt that breaks 5 miles from the next town. So the bass player in one of the bands gets out, walks with the drummer from the other band down to the Walmart. They get the part that they need for the car or for the van. They come back and they change it. And it's just what you do, right? It's just like there's no drama. There's no like what the hell happened, And it's funny too, because in that time, just that short amount of time, it's like I knew these guys just mostly as performers or people I'd see out socially. But it's like you spend like 48 hours with him and it's like, oh, that guy's like a lot more mild than you would think. Like he's on stage, he's a wild man, but oh my God, he's like the shyest person in the world. And oh, that guy gets grumpy at nothing,
So true. You get like you just understand people so deeply when you travel with them in any degree, and Yeah, I'd like to think that on more occasions than not, we got into that problem-solving mode of being like, all right, we got to go change out this part. We got to find this part. We got to fix this. But if I'm honest, more often than not, we probably just lost our minds for a second, and then like we'd argue, lose our minds for a little bit, and then like be like, all right, we got to figure this out, and then figure it out, you know. Oh my God. Yeah, the amount of stories I could tell you like that is just it's very much you start feeling like you could handle anything, and then something new happens, and you're like, oh, this is a new situation that I haven't encountered yet. So I hope I all the practice I've had with new situations is gonna do me well.
So is that where the kind of sharing of trauma and processing of trauma, that's who you came back to was the other band members?
Yeah. So I was telling you, I write fairly regularly, like in pretty compulsively, at least songwriting. I do like some prose writing and like some just like I work on little like children's books that will never see the light of day and like screenplays that I'll never share with anybody. But like that's just as on occasion. Like, but it as far as songwriting goes, I do it, at least weekly, sometimes nightly, sometimes every other day. And when a really heavy thing comes up, I can put it in a song, but it doesn't feel like I've processed it really until it's been worked on. Like once, so I'll write a song and I'll record it on my phone or my recording apparatus that I have at home, and I'll put it on the internet. Like I have a Patreon thing where I'll put a song on there, but it still doesn't feel like I've released that song or like I've actually processed that emotion or that event until I've gotten together really with these people, with the taxpayers. And the reason for that is because like not only are they aware of the event, they're aware in a lot of cases of the context of the event that happened and the build up to it, like the people involved. And they'll also sit there and they'll cry with me about it, and they'll we'll laugh about a person who died, like not at the person who died, but we'll laugh about like good times that we have with that person or like funny stories about that person, and we'll remember them, and then we'll cry about them and their passing, and then we'll work on the song, and we'll expand upon the song, and we'll mix it and master it for the course of a year or multiple years, and really, really get in there about it. And we'll talk about that person or that event, and we'll just really, just spend a lot of time with it. And I think in that way it's therapeutic. In that way it's like seeing it's not like seeing a therapist, it's more like just processing an event collectively with people who know you. And that's, I think, one of the best ways to process a traumatic event. And so, like, thinking about some of the stuff on this record, to combine the two things that we were just talking about, touring and some of these events, like, so I live in Minneapolis now, and when we were touring regularly, I either lived in, Portland, Oregon till about 2011, and then, like I said, New Orleans from 2011 to like 2022 or something, like about 10 years or so. And then during that time, we spent a lot of time in Minneapolis, made a lot of friends here, and that was through music. And I met a friend of mine who owned a record store there, and became good friends with his family. And this one time, one of many times, we were, driving, our van broke down. We got another vehicle. We had to send that to the scrapyard. Our van broke down. We got another vehicle. That one broke down. And then we were about, 500 miles from Minneapolis. They were in Bloomington, Indiana. And we got this car from a person who ran our record label at the time that had a misfit skull painted onto the hood of the car. And he said, he was like, here, I'm gonna sell you this car for $23 for good luck. And if you make it to the next place, we'll consider it like, like, you know, the universe is looking out for you. So we're heading to Minneapolis, and of course we make it like 20 miles and we break down and we got a show that night. So I call my friend in Minneapolis, the one that owns the record store. And I'm like, I don't think we're gonna make this show tonight. I just don't see. And he was like, look, if you can get it towed to my house, I can fix it for you. I got you covered. Like, you know, he was this jack of all trade. He owned a record store, but he also was a former mechanic and a kindergarten teacher and like all these different things. He just like did everything. And we're like, oh, really? Okay. I guess we'll see if we can get it towed to there. And by the way, hot tip for any touring bands that might hear this, or for you, Jed, if you ever like do some traveling, the platinum membership of AAA is really useful if you travel a lot by car, because you can get up to, it used to be up to 500 miles of a free tow with that. And it becomes worth it immediately. The moment you have to do that, it pays for itself. Because if you got to get your vehicle towed from the middle of nowhere to the next big city, if you don't have that, it's crazy expensive to get a tow that far, or the alternative is you get it towed to some small town and you're stuck there until they can fix it, you know, or you just have to sell it to a scrapyard, all of which we've done before. But like at this particular time, it was just under 500 miles. So we got it towed to Minneapolis, drop it off in his yard. He gets to work on it. He's like, go get to my record store, walk in that direction. People are waiting for you. The show's about to start. So we like, you know, carry our stuff. He starts working on the car. He fixes it, and you know, we play the show. And over the years, these kind of things keep happening, keeps looking out for us, keeps doing all these wonderful things like putting us up. And then, you know, eventually I left New Orleans. My partner and I, we were starting a family, and we wanted to be in a place like Minneapolis where we thought it would be a great place for our kid to grow up. You know, I love Minneapolis. And right after we got there, you know, I meet up with this friend, and trigger warning here, I'm about to get into some heavy stuff, but like my friend, the mechanic, the guy who owned the record store, he had a lot of demons, and he had a lot of mental health problems in addition to all these wonderful qualities that he had, and he had a lot of struggles. And when I got into town, he was struggling. Alcoholism was one of them, and addiction issues. And I'm sober now. I had been, at the point that I moved to town, I had been sober for, you know, several years. And I told him, hey, like, let's go to a meeting together. We can go to a meeting. He told me he was really struggling with like suicidal ideation and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, let's go to a meeting. I know a friend who does a non-denominational AA meeting. We can go to that together. And he's like, yeah, I'll meet you there. And I go, he doesn't show that night, and I'm calling him, he doesn't pick up. And that night he hung himself in his shed. And so he dies, he leaves behind his family. He's got teenage kids, and he, you know, everybody's just destroyed by it. Like, you know, he had a dog, and the dog ended up going to like the animal shelter. The animal shelter was like, hey, you got to pick this dog up within 24 hours or else, you know, she's going to be euthanized. So, you know, we ended up with a dog, and we love her. She's a great dog. All of these different things happened very quickly after moving to Minneapolis, very tough events. And so, you know, like, how do I process stuff is like, I work on songs about it, like in a journal. And so I write songs about it. And it was around that time we'd started talking about working on a new Taxpayers record, because of some other heavy stuff that had happened like that, that we had wanted to work out, not just my stuff, but everyone's stuff, you know. And who do I call to talk about that event with, but like the other members of the Taxpayers who know this person and who were a part of all these experiences that we shared, you know, with him. And we get together, and yeah, we remember him, we laugh about him, we cry, and yeah, and then we just work on songs about it. And it feels like a good way to not only like process it myself, but also as a in service of that person. Like, it's a way of putting something, like saying thank you to this, even though they're not there to hear it, you know. saying thank you to the to what they did for your life, and also like the hole that it leaves when that person's gone. It's a way of honoring them, I suppose. So yeah.
So I had a friend who passed last fall. He just had this, it was just like a crazy incident. We thought he was going to get better. He was in the hospital. And then one of his former bandmates called me and he said, you know, if you want to come up and say goodbye, you know, this is the time to do it. And, right, there's just such a pendulum of like seeing these people I hadn't seen in some cases in like 6 or 7 years. And we're gathered there to say goodbye. And it's like, we're like peeing our pants laughing about something that happened 15 years ago, right? And then like crying the next second.
Yeah, 100%. Oh my God, absolutely. Like another thing that we wrote about on this record, is something that happened, like once we started working on this record, a close friend of ours who we met through touring in like 2008 or something. This person used to put on shows in Santa Cruz, California. And then like that person like moved all over the place. Like, eventually that person moved to Oregon, played in bands with some of the taxpayers and some of our side projects. And then like, you know, that person moved to New Orleans, moved to Minneapolis. And I didn't know that they had moved to Minneapolis until I had moved there. And I ran into them and said, hey, you know, like, August, what are you doing here? And it's like, I just moved to Minneapolis last year to be with my partner. We're here to like, you know, be in a safer environment than New Orleans was in, because, you know, New Orleans is a pretty violent city. And then so me and my partner, after my kid was born, me and my partner, we got like one of our first date nights. We got her parents to watch the kid. To watch our son, and we got on our bikes, and we were going to go see this Alanis Morissette musical about Jack and Little Pill. We got free tickets to it. We were like, that sounds fun, let's go to that. And on the way, we like ran into our friends who were going to this house show, this punk show in the neighborhood, and they were like, oh, you should come, like we're gonna play. And we're like, we got tickets to Alanis Morissette, but maybe we'll go maybe we'll go afterwards. And we thought about going afterwards, but we decided against it kind of last minute. And that night we get home. Next day I found out there was a shooting at the house show, just like a random shooting, some kids like from the neighborhood. It was kind of a, maybe like somewhat dicey neighborhood. No, not like crazy or anything, but like, you know, not the sort of neighborhood you would expect that sort of thing to happen. But some random kids wander into the house show. They hit on some girls. They don't like the answer, and they find out that lots of the people at the show are gay or trans, and they become really upset at that. And then on their way out, they start shooting into the crowd and just randomly shooting into the crowd. And person who caught the bullet was my friend August, and our old friend August, who we had known for all these years. And, you know, we're already working on this record at that point. And August died, and ironically, you know, moved to Minneapolis to be in a safer place. Then there was just this outpouring of love and support from the punk community, right? Because it was a house show, and so all around the country, people were like, oh my God, you know, like, here's how you can support victims of the Nudieland shooting. That was the name of the house venue, Nudieland. And eventually they did a memorial where people got together and remembered August. And so I brought my son to this, and he was a little baby at the time, and we met on Nicollet Island, which is right in the middle of the Mississippi River in Minneapolis, and that's where the event was. And I had my son in little backpack, and people I had known through the punk community just all around the country that I know through taxpayers tours and shows were there, not just people in Minneapolis, like people came from really far away. And I have this very vivid memory of seeing these old friends who I hadn't seen, like, just like you said, it's been like 7 years or something since I've seen them. And we see each other and we just, this big look of joy, and we start laughing and we hug. And then just like this look of sadness comes over as we realize why we're together, you know? And, you know, I'm like, oh my God, it's so good to see you. And then like, oh my God, why are we here? You know? And then I'm like, oh, and this is my son. And like, you know, like just such, so many conflicting emotions all just at the same place. It was a beautiful experience though, that memorial, because they did, you know, they had bands play, his partner performed, and, you know, yeah, it was, yeah, it's one of these human experiences of processing events that seem so inhuman by doing what you can to maintain the humanity of that person and of yourself and of the people around you, you know, like, especially something like that, where it's completely senseless. I feel like, you know, people want to try to, I don't know, make sense out of their life by putting something positive, by centering the positive of what that person was, you know? And in the case of the punk world, it was like, well, get together and have a punk show and invite everybody. And it was really, yeah, it was really beautiful. But yeah, like laughing, crying, all the emotions all at the same time.
You've been listening to a conversation with Rob Taxpayer of The Taxpayers. The band's new LP is Circle Breaker. You can learn more about the group at their official website, thetaxpayers.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next time.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.